Welcome to the third lecture for world literature. I hope you did not dismiss Francis Benz's essay, Beyond a Nation's Boundaries, simply because the title did not reveal much about the essay. The essay, as you discovered, is not at all political or has anything to do with government or nations. Beyond a Nation's Boundaries was a beautiful exposition on that blessed scientist, Louis Pasteur, and his discovery of the cure for hydrophobia. What a wonderful and well-structured essay. It was such a remarkable essay because of Louis Pasteur's intelligence, his persistence and humility in the face of historical and scientific obstacles. While searching for the cure, Pasteur had to overcome ridicule, ignorance, doubt, failure. Still more remarkable was that when he finally did discover the cure, he gave all the credit to God. This week, you are asked to read another biographical essay, this time about St. Damian. Damian, like Pasteur, was devoted to Christ, and he labored physically, mentally, and spiritually for the betterment of humanity. Damian devoted his life to administering his priestly duties to lepers. As you know from your reading, Damian came to the leper colony located in Molokai, one of the small islands in Hawaii, in the spring of 1873. Now, lepers and leprosy have been with the human race for as long as recorded history can testify. Documents from ancient Egypt and Greece, as well as ample examples found in the Old Testament, can tell us leprosy was a horrible disease. It was often described as a disease of the mind and of the body. It is a disease of excruciating pain where the victim suffers by basically rotting to death. There are a few things we might want to keep in mind about this disease to truly appreciate the sacrifice Damian made by volunteering to serve on Molokai. First, leprosy was incurable. Although lepers are still with us today, there are still many on Hawaii, but most cases today are reported to come from places like rural China and South Africa. But in the off chance that somebody does contract leprosy, there are cures available. But in the late 19th century, once you contracted leprosy, death was imminent. Okay, the second point you want to keep in mind is very important. Leprosy was always considered not just an ailment of the body, but it was also assumed to be a sign from God that he was angry with you. That is, leprosy was seen as a consequence of sin. Lepers were really bad sinners. So throughout history, to be a leper meant you, A, lived in exile, since leprosy is highly contagious, contact with others was out of the question, and B, you lived a life spurned and stigmatized as a sinner. So when Damian agreed to serve the lepers, he also agreed to live a life of exile, of condemnation, of ridicule, and physical torment. What I'd like to do now is analyze this essay for character. If you're ever asked to write a character analysis, well, perhaps this lecture will give you some pointers on how to do that. Let's begin. First of all, a character analysis requires you to do the same type of work as you would for a character sketch, to provide personality traits with examples and tie them together in a thoughtful essay. So, I will assert that in Damian the Leper, Damian is a true follower of Christ. He is courageous in his mission to bring others to God, and he suffers loneliness, fatigue, pain, and death to accomplish this task. How do I know this? Well, after first reading, I have a pretty good impression of Damian's overall dedication to his job on Molokai. But since I need to provide a sketch, I must be specific in what words I choose to describe Damian's character, and I must provide specific examples to prove my impression. I'll do that now. Okay, first, he was courageous. That's evident from the beginning of the essay. He volunteers to go to Molokai, and he will not accept a no. He's practical. As he tells his bishop, he, Damian, has the experience the others lacked. He has the strength to build things and to clean things. He tells the bishop he's no stranger to missionary work. He's already done missionary work in Pune and Kohala. Okay, he's physically strong, he's able to build, he has stamina for long hours of visiting the sick. We find out that he sleeps on the ground during his first few weeks on Molokai. He's lonely. Just because he's a saint doesn't mean that he doesn't suffer human failures or human temptations. He's lonely. He is isolated. There's very little help on Molokai. And there's a deep reluctance from the outside world to help build a hospital or to send medical supplies. No visitations are allowed. Once on the island, that's where you stay. There's strict government-regulated codes to prevent any further contamination. So he's lonely. He's also impatient, as we find out toward the end of the essay. This is understandable impatience, I think, since when you're administering to the dying, time is of the essence, right? He was impatient with the outside world and its inability to respond correctly. He was impatient with the help that was sent him. Some of the help that was sent him weren't really that helpful. I also think that Damien was persistent. He was persistent with authorities. He got the government to send medical supplies, clothes, and a $6 stipend for each man on the island. He was dedicated. He didn't give up on the lepers. He allowed the lepers to get used to him. He wasn't swayed away by their reluctance or their anger, their hot tempers. He was compassionate, definitely compassionate. It's interesting to note, and I think it's important to note, that Damien was moved by their illness. On page 29, he goes so far as to say that their hideous appearance made him shudder. Damien was not immune to human reactions, and yet he was compassionate. Even though he was repulsed, even though it made him shudder, he was compassionate toward the dying. He ate off their plates. He touched them. When he had to deliver the sacrament of the dying, he had to touch them. He was faithful. He was faithful to his duties towards Christ. He was obedient. He was humble. There's a remarkable scene recorded in this essay about Damien's willingness to have his confession heard by everyone on the boat rather than let the opportunity of penance pass him by. He was humble in that way. He was also humble in that he never boasted of his accomplishments. Okay, well, that just about wraps it up for a character sketch, I think. The second selection you were asked to read this week is quite a bit different from Damien the Leper. Although G.K. Chesterton's Romantic in the Rain lacks the gravity of Damien the Leper, it possesses a charm and levity which reflects another, very essential part of life, joy and delight in God's creation. All right, when we go into a piece of literature that we're going to analyze, we start with the title. So, Romantic in the Rain, what do you think of that? I like it. The alliteration makes the title catchy. I also like the idea of a romantic in the rain. Let's discuss this word romantic. Romantic is a loaded term. Many times when we hear it, we think of romance, of a boy and girl pining over one another, that kind of thing. But romance is a very old word. And before it became swallowed up in love associations, it was a term associated with adventure. The romantic was often a high-minded idealist who strove for perfection by practicing all the virtues. The romantic's ambition in life was to become perfect in all ways, and so he sought after tests. He sought after challenges upon which he would sharpen his skills of wit, compassion, or physical strength. He was an individual who looked upon the world with optimism. He saw the world as a world full of possibilities. He felt emotions strongly and had a passionate response to anything that touched his life. When he pursued a woman, if he pursued a woman, he pursued her as a noble goal. Several knights of medieval romances dedicated themselves to the Blessed Mother. And when the knight did pursue a woman, he sought the Blessed Mother's image and likeness in the woman of his desire. So that's something to keep in mind about this. The origin of the term romance and what that means. It's a very full term. Another point worth considering about this term romantic is that it was used to describe a literary movement at the end of the 18th century called Romanticism. William Wordsworth, the poet considered the father of Romanticism, described his poetic goal as making the ordinary extraordinary. Wordsworth sought in his poetry to make the ordinary extraordinary. Isn't that wonderful? Now, I ask you, are you a romantic in this larger sense of the word? Do you see the world as full of possibilities? Chesterton's essay, Romantic in the Rain, explores the way in which romantic views reign. While the narrator recognizes and celebrates the natural cleansing and thirst-quenching qualities of rain, he also explores it as an extraordinary thing. Most people shun the rain, view the rain as an inconvenience, but for the narrator, the rain provides an unending stream of enjoyment. Through the use of metaphor, the narrator brings his observations to life. For example, rain is an insane hygienist that scrubs the sky with giant brooms and mops. Rain is the greatest social institution, providing a bath for everyone, rich and poor alike. Rain is the elixir, the drink, that no part of nature can resist. It's a sweet liqueur on which nature becomes intoxicated. Rain is a magician that gives us a double world and allows us to see the world upside down. Rain is the bearer of light, casting its sheen over surfaces so that the whole world becomes a world of mirrors. The romance of a rainy day is further magnified by the Macintosh. Listen to what the narrator has to say about the Macintosh, and I quote, "There is a wild garment that still carries nobly the name of a wild Highland clan, a clan come from those hills where rain is not so much an incident as an atmosphere. Surely every man of imagination must feel a tempestuous flame of Celtic romance spring up within him whenever he puts on a Macintosh." Well, Macintosh, like McKay or MacLeod, is a Scottish name, and those Scottish names, beginning with Mac, are generally Highland names. The Highlands, the mountainous regions in Scotland, associated with a people connected with Scotland's noble past, provide the perfect illusion for the narrator to convey the adventure of putting on a raincoat. He says, tongue-in-cheek, "And there is really something in the Macintosh of the military qualities of the Highlander. The proper cheap Macintosh has a blue and white sheen, as of steel or iron. It gleams like armor. I like to think of it as the uniform of that ancient clan in some of its old and misty raids. I like to think of all the Macintoshes, in their Macintoshes, descending on some doomed lowland village." Do you recognize what literary technique Chesterton is using in this section I just read? Well, it's hyperbole. Hyperbole, that means exaggeration for effect. Hyperbole is a common literary technique in satires or comedic literature. In this case, the narrator is stretching the history of the Macintosh to emphasize the romance of going out in the rain. So, in closing, I might say we would not be the worse for wear if we remembered Chesterton's essay the next time we had to take out the trash or walk the dog in the rain. Well, that wraps up this week's lecture. I'll speak to you next week.